In the KSRO kitchen, I'm Steve Garner, and who should we see in the kitchen but Chef John Ash?
How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm good.
You've been cooking this week?
I have. Well, you know, I cook for myself all the time, and often I'm working on a recipe or part of a recipe, or, you know, I see something that I'd like to try that and maybe I'll play around with it. This last week I've been working on a series of recipes for my next Press Democrat piece, which is about Cinco de Mayo. As it turns out, there aren't any, at least that I can find, any really traditional Cinco de Mayo foods, with the exception of maybe guacamole or something like that. But there are all kinds of things in the Mexican repertoire that are really fun.
Oh, that's wonderful. What about for yourself? Do you just put together salads, or I'm sure you have a lot of soups that are frozen?
I do a lot of, and I freeze a lot, actually. Then I have to stop making them because I run out of room in my freezer. But soups are my go-to food. You know, you can make it. You can have it for a couple of days. Many of them get better, you know, as they sit in the freezer. So that's and it's an easy one.
Marvelous. Have you noticed any shortages when you've been out shopping, ingredients that you're really trying to get that you can't get, or no?
You know, I haven't, but I've heard, and actually I guess we're going to talk about that today a bit, that baking has just mm-hmm. gone crazy. So baking supplies are kind of in short shrift out there. But basically not. I kind of find everything I want. You know, some specialty fruits and things like that, they're not so plentiful, but... And it's one of those things that I have to say that in the back of my mind, although you did that wonderful piece on should we be afraid of our food, you know, and the virus and all of that stuff, I still am a little, you know, I don't want to get food in which there's a lot of exposure to strangers and things like that.
I'm there with you. Well, yeah. Baking certainly has been impacted, and we thought who better to talk about baking, and not only the supplies and demand, but also how baking students have been affected by the corona. And that's Shelley Kaldansky. Shelley has taught for a number of years at the Santa Rosa Junior College. She's also a published author, very well respected in the baking community. So I shot her a little text message saying, hey, could we have you on to talk about how you are soldiering on with baking classes? Mm-hmm. What are the limitations, and what type of technology did you have to rapidly deploy and get up to speed on using to keep students engaged? And also I asked her, since it seems like the whole country's become sourdough obsessed, right? Everyone is baking sourdough bread. How she's approaching that, whether she has starters on hand, whether she teaches how to make sourdough starters, and the general lack of any yeast anywhere on any retail shelves in any market anywhere in Sonoma County. And so with that, hi, Shelley.
Hi, Steve. Hi, John.
How are you?
Great. Good to hear your voices.
Good to hear your voices. So all the classes were pretty much canceled, and of course the retail bakery and the restaurants closed. But you wanted to soldier on and continue to teach. How did that all happen? Who did you turn to put something in place which would allow you to do online teaching? And then that's one thing, the theory, the lecture, but also the practical part. How did you solve that problem?
Yeah, that was a challenge. I've kudos to all teachers out there. They're working around the clock right now, turning their face-to-face classes into online classes. So we were no different at Santa Rosa Junior College, and teachers are using a lot of different platforms to communicate with their students. One of the more popular ones are class meetings over Zoom. I know everyone's doing Zoom these days, mm-hmm. all kinds of meetings, but that's a really good platform for us to have almost, you know, live classes with our students. And then I am doing YouTube for my demonstrations. So I've started a YouTube channel for myself so that my students can access my cooking demonstrations. And so far, so good. It's been well received by our students, and everyone is trying to cook and bake right now. So I think being in their home kitchen is comforting when they know they've got some expert advice the other end of the screen.
Isn't it? I often think about, well, baking or any kind of cooking, if you're learning it, you got to get your hands in it somehow. And how do you
do?
How do you bridge that?
Well, it's all about articulating really well what those senses are to our students in video and on screen. And a lot of the instructors are also doing lots of video office hours. So the students can come to us with what their problem is, and we can troubleshoot it together over video. So that's how we're doing it now until we can get back in the kitchens face-to-face.
Now, you mentioned Zoom. Is that the platform you're using, or are you using something called Canvas?
So Canvas is the platform that the college uses, almost like a warehouse for all the students' information, like their assignments and how they would turn things in to their teacher. But Zoom is great for an actual live classroom. So you can just send your students an invitation to the Zoom class meeting. Our students show up in their chef coats. We can all see each other's faces and interact live just like we would in the classroom.
So how do students actually find the ingredients to participate in the baking and the garde manger and the meat and sauce classes?
Yeah, that was something we had to put a lot of thought into, and we've come up with a really great way for our students to come and pick up a kit of ingredients, and we have it really well planned. So there's lots of, you know, good social distancing. They come at an exact or prearranged time. They don't come in our building. They don't come in contact with any employees, and come with their own basket, box, or bag, and pick up the ingredients that they need to use for that week.
What about if they need equipment?
We have a lending library.
Yeah.
That was a concern also. So, I mean, we're lending all kinds of things. About the only thing we're not lending are stovetops and ovens. But almost anything else, we're able to lend to our students.
So who knows how long this will continue. Can students still sign up, or will they be able to sign up for classes?
Yeah, so we're about halfway into our 8-week block of the spring semester. However, there is a seasonal tart class which starts next weekend, and there are still a few spaces left in that one who wants to hone their tart baking skills. And so that is the class that's opening up soon, and then we'll be planning for either online or face-to-face over the summer. And there are a number of classes over the summer schedule. There's a pizza and focaccia class, a grilling class, a Paris French cuisine class, which will all be online if, in fact, we're still under a shelter-in-place.
And you're starting a new class this Monday, too?
Yeah. My class is plate presentation. And so that class, that's part of our culinary certificate. So for the students who are going their baking and pastry or culinary certificate, which actually this has been pretty easy and fun to transition to online because we delve into food photography too. So this is a good chance for the students to really learn how to photograph their work well and turn it in electronically. It's a new day.
it's so interesting. That class, I mean, there's a kind of cliche in the food business that 50% of the enjoyment of food comes through its presentation, how it looks, and the other 50% from taste. So that is a terribly important thing for students to need to learn how to do.
Yeah, and honestly, right now, I mean, this is a perfect time for us all to be, like, engaging our creative self, because we're all having to be really creative to venture through this difficult time right now. So it's a class full of creativity.
So Betsy Fisher teaches the hospitality part, the wine portion of the culinary program, and she usually has field trips during the semester. How's she faring during this? What's she doing?
Yeah, Betsy was, her class is one of my favorites right now. She's actually transitioned her field trip class to a virtual field trip. So she's doing Zoom, and the students have already visited with the sommelier at Madrona Manor and toured all over the property. They went to Park Avenue Catering, and Bruce Reisman toured them all around. Oh. I think this week they're going to Cousteau Bakery with Will Seppi. So it's really amazing, actually, what you can do when you switch gears and turn virtual.
So I don't know if you've noticed, Shelley, but there's a lack of flour and yeasts on the shelves in most retail markets.
Oh, my gosh, yes. I certainly have noticed. It's funny. I was in the midst of developing a baking book when the pandemic sort of erupted. And so I have my pulse on the ingredient shelves in grocery stores. And everyone's panicking a bit. But I'm finding the best times to get ingredients are to go early. Mm-hmm. Because usually things are wiped out by midday.
Do you have a working title for your new baking book yet?
It's called Fantabulous Baking. And it's sort of an over-the-top book that is going to be all about really show-stopping presentations of baked goods. So lots of different tips and tricks for decorating.
And when do you anticipate it being out? Who's publishing it?
So my publisher, Weldon Owen, our goal was fall. So we'll only be limited by our ability to photograph the book because we usually do that in San Francisco. And so that'll probably be one of the last places where the shelter in place will be lifted. But hopefully fall.
Fantabulous. Mm-hmm. What a great name for a baking book.
That's great.
And Shelley, if you Google Shelley Kaldonski, you can see all the other books that she has written and co-written. Now, on to, John was mentioning, we were mentioning yeast and sourdough starters. Do you teach sourdough starting as part of the curriculum?
Yeah. We have a number of bread classes. And so we have probably about three different sourdough starters that we maintain at the Culinary Center. And we also, with our students, go through starting their own sourdough starter so they know the practice. I really like Tartine's model. I think the Tartine Bread Book has a really great tutorial on starting your own sourdough starter.
So what can you make sourdough starters from? Steve and I were talking about back in our old hippie days, we made bread with beer. As a starter.
Yeah.
So I have a question for you. Can you use other odd things like, I don't know, anything that fizzes?
Yeah, so one of the things that you'll want to be careful of is the salt content, because that inhibits yeast growth. So, yes, I mean, some of the, you know, tried and true things are, you know, organic grapes, organic cabbage leaves, organic potatoes. A lot of those things already have yeast on the skin of them, which is a good way to seed your starter and develop some great flavor pretty early. So those would be some great ways, you know, if you were going to do something other than just starting with organic flour.
Okay,
water.
I'm going to throw one too. What about kombucha?
Yeah, so kombucha, sure. Certainly. That's fun. I haven't done that before.
Yeah.
I like the sound of it.
I did too.
I know a lot of people use dried fruit. That's a real good medium to start a sourdough starter.
Yes. They love that sugar.
And do you have an on-site starter that you have to tend to and fluff and fold and minister to?
Yeah. So luckily when you have a well-developed starter, you can put it in refrigeration and kind of leave it be for quite some time. So you really don't have to feed it all that regularly. So we have, you know, I go in to the Culinary Center about once a week to, you know, tape a few things for my classes. So I'll pull it out of refrigeration and give it a feeding about that often. But if you're going to have your starter at room temperature, you'll want to feed it every 24 hours.
So why not have a Santa Rosa Junior College Culinary Center starter that you could sell to raise money for the school?
Hey, that's a great idea.
Don't you think?
Because
a lot of people are so, I mean, it's not intimidating, but it is intimidating. I was thinking your comment about the Tartine book, which is such a fabulous book, but boy, when you read it, because they're so precise, it's like,
right.
Oh, I don't know.
It's pretty scientific.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't have to be. It does. It really doesn't have to be. Like, I teach my students how to use basic ratios. And the reason why Tartine does it so precisely is because they're a bakery that has to produce very consistent results every single bake with their breads. But once a bread baker gets used to the sensory cues of their starter, you really don't have to measure. You can use eyeballing kind of hit all of those sensory cues.
Okay, so you need just to make a starter, you need what? Flour, water, maybe a little yeast, and the two most important things, time and attention, which we have plenty of time. We have a lot of that on our hands.
We do.
And that's about it, really.
Yeah, so you can sit around and watch your sourdough starter grow.
So are you a fan of quick breads, Shelley? We wanted to ask you about that before we let you go.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so the quick breads are starter breads for real and not necessarily using starter. So when you don't have actual yeast on hand, making a quick bread, you just use a chemical leavener is a great bread to make. And they can come sweet or savory.
Yeah, we both made lots of quick bread. Certainly zucchini bread in the heyday when you were having all these zucchinis that really weren't edible. You just grate them up and put them in zucchini bread. And, of course, pumpkin bread. We did a lot of those. And banana bread. Yeah. And a date walnut was one that I used to do, too. Is that going to – well, that's probably not fancy enough for your new Fantabulous book, right, Shelley?
Yeah, I'll have to put some sponge sugar on it or something.
Well, this was great. I'm so glad that the staff has been so innovative to keep students engaged and allow them to continue their education via online and also picking up ingredients to be able to follow your YouTube tutorials. It's very innovative.
Yeah.
And we don't know when this is going to – when you're going to reopen and what's happening. But you did say that people can go online and sign up for some summer classes. And also there's some opening in your pastry?
Tarts.
In your tart class.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Basil tarts, right. And they can just go to the schedule of classes on the SRJC website.
And look for tarts?
Yes. And it's seasonal tart baking.
Seasonal tart baking. Mm. Thank you, Chef Shelley Kaldonski, for joining us today.
Thank you, Steve and John. Great to talk to you.
Happy baking.
and may your dough rise. or something silly.
Take care. Bye-bye. We'll take a break. We'll come back and we will delve into the mysteries of shortages and how the supply lines work in the big wide world of flour. That's coming up next. It's the KSRO Good Food Hour with Steve Garner and Chef John Ashton. Before we say goodbye for this break, we received in the email yesterday the Lockdown 2020 Sourdough Tea Loaf from Fiona Bird in Scotland. So we're going to post Fiona's sourdough tea loaf.
And this is the one with seaweed in it.
This is the one that has a scant tablespoon of dried seaweed starter.
Yeah.
If those of you remember, about a year and a half, 2 years ago, we had Fiona Bird visiting us in the studio from Scotland. She's one of the acknowledged masters of foraging in the Scotland area and throughout Europe, and has written a number of books about seaweed and baking. So anyway, you're not going to get this recipe anywhere else.
No.
The Lockdown 2020 Sourdough Tea Loaf from Fiona Bird. We'll put that on the Chaos Auto website at the end of the show so you can take a look at that. Back after this.
Larkfield hears FM News Talk KSRO on Crystal Clear FM at 103.5.
The Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market hopes your family is safe and healthy and extends a heartfelt thank you to all of Sonoma County for voting them Best Farmers Market. You'll find a wide selection of garden starts, savor farm fresh eggs and produce like fresh strawberries, avocados, and asparagus. Discover quality beef, pork, fresh seafood, and freshly made sausages. Multiple vendors are serving pre-made meals. Green Grocer has bacon or mushroom breakfast pockets, and Quiche and Carrie's shares a variety of handmade quiches and prepared meals, including gluten-free options. Try Little Farm's Dry Farm Potato Chips, and Mad Batter Cakery bakes gluten-free brownies, cakes, cookies, and scones. Santa Rosa's Original Certified Farmers Market at the Luther Burbank Center for the Arts is open year-round, Wednesdays and Saturdays, 8:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Thank you, Sonoma County, for voting them number one. the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, where it's always fresh, local, and fun.
Hi, German Motors in Cotati. How can we help?
Können Sie mir mit meinem BMW Auto helfen?
Can I help you with your BMW automobile? Sure, but you don't have to speak German at German Motors. At German Motors, we provide factory-level service without factory prices for Mercedes, Volkswagen, Audi, and BMW vehicles right off 101 in Cotati. You can call us at 793-0789 or on the web at justgermanmotors.com.
Danke.
You're welcome.
Auf Wiedersehen.
It's paradise.
Paradise Pet Resorts is open to care for your furry family members, including those of our essential workforce. Human social distancing and sanitizing procedures and new no-contact drop-off are in place. Your pups still want to play, and with all-day supervised pup play, they get the socialization they need to be a comfort to you and your family. Nobody loves your pets like you do, but nobody cares for your pets like they do at Paradise Pet Resorts.
Paradise Pet Resorts.
You're a small business owner, and there's nothing small about what you do. That's why Dell Small Business Technology Advisors give you trusted advice, one-on-one partnership, and tailored tech solutions, like computers with Intel Core processors, servers, storage, networking, plus thousands of top-brand electronics, accessories, and software. No matter your technology needs, Dell is here to help your small business do big things. Call 877-BUY-DELL to speak with an advisor today. That's 877-BUY-DELL.
Atlas Pavers is an essential business offering no-contact virtual consultations that result in a personalized 3D design. Online at atlaspaversco.com.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
In the KSRO kitchen, Chef John Ash and me, Steve Garner, celebrating 34 years in the KSRO kitchen on the Good Food Hour. Thanks to Shelley Kaldansky, executive pastry chef instructor at the Santa Rosa Junior College, for illuminating us on some of the ins and outs of bread baking and yeast availability and all of those arcane
subjects. Boy, I can't wait to see her new book, too.
And her new book, Fantabulous. Yeah. It'll be out in the fall. So we're all wondering, where's the flour? Where's the yeast? Well, I spoke to Keith Giusto earlier this week, and he put me in touch with Jim McCarthy. And Jim's the manager at Keith Giusto's Bakery Supply in Petaluma. And if anybody's going to have an idea about how to access flour and what the supply lines are looking like, it would be Jim. Hi, Jim, and thanks for joining us this morning.
Oh, yeah, you bet. How you doing?
Good. And John Ash, say hello.
Hello.
Hey.
So, first of all, are the mills still operating? How many mills does Central Milling and Giusto operate?
So, we own three. They are in Utah. And, yeah, they're going 24/7 at this point. Yeah.
So, why is there such a shortage? Because I'm assuming that commercial bakeries are not buying as much flour as they have, or maybe I'm wrong about that. And you would think more would be available for home bakers, yet Steve and I both said we go to the market to look for flour, and the shelves are empty.
Well, I mean, it's just the opposite, actually. You know, we have a multitude of folks that we supply that have shut down here over the last month and a half or so, but everybody that's still out there doing business is more than compensating for that by asking for even more than usual. We do some flour supply to Costco on the West Coast, and they're asking for, I think it's about 8 times more than what their normal weekly delivery is.
Wow.
So think about when you go into Safeway or wherever your local grocery store is, and the bread is sold out. So the big commercial bakeries are cranking it out as fast as they can. And there's a gap in there that's been created by some of the smaller bakeries not producing.
Okay. And so even though you're cranking out flour 24 hours a day, you've cut back on a lot of the specialty flours in order to just supply the basic flour formulas. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. And it's unfortunate. I mean, I wish that we could do a little bit more of the specialty. You know, we keep on looking at how we're doing this. And I think every week we get a little bit faster and a little bit better. You know, what we do at my facility, this is the distribution center. So we're the ones that break the 50-pound bags down into the 5-pound bags. We're the ones that do the packing and shipping for all the online orders. Plus, we supply all of the bakeries and restaurants, donut shops. Everybody here in the Bay Area that uses our flour all gets shipped out of our facility.
Wow.
So you can, but we can order online flour from you.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, yeah. It's still there. It's just takes you a little while to get it.
Well, there's a couple things with that is when you go in there, you're going to see all of our normal selection. But because the demand is so high, like for us, our online orders are running 20 times what the normal daily amount is. So basically every day I get what was normally 10 days worth of business or okay. even 2 weeks worth of business. So, you know, we're running at it as fast as we can. And with that, you know, there's a finite limit, right, to how much we can do. There's a finite limit to how much the mills can produce, even at 24/7. How much 5-pound bags I can make in a day with the team that I have, how many boxes I can box up. So that's what's forcing us to focus just on the main SKU. Mm. Hopefully, as we get faster at our and continue to refine our packing process, we'll be able to open up some more of the SKUs. But for right now, it's just the basics.
Okay.
So if you go online, you know, type 00, you know, ABC Plus, bread, all-purpose, or pizza flour is really what's there.
Okay. Now, sometimes when you go online, as I've tried for the past couple of days, it'll show unavailable or out of stock.
Right. Right. And that's just a control that we had to put in place after the first couple of weeks, because allowing everybody to just keep on placing orders after orders and us getting so far behind that we're not even filling them in a timely manner doesn't benefit anybody.
Okay.
So we did start to put quantity limits in place to make things workable and manageable.
Got it.
So do you have a waiting list? I mean, if I said I wanted to get some bread flour, but and I'm willing to wait for a couple of weeks, can you do that?
No, the best thing to do is just get on there every morning and, you know, take a shot.
Okay.
just go to the Central Milling website.
Yeah, I don't know how else to put it, really.
Yeah.
We have somebody that, you know, resets all the totals in the morning. And once they set it, then the counter starts up on, you know, on every single thing.
But the nice thing is that living here in the Bay Area, and I'm sure you've gotten a huge uptick in people who are driving up from the East Bay and San Francisco on the South Bay, used to be pretty much Petaluma, Santa Rosa, Sonoma County that was frequenting the bakery supplies. But that's changed, hasn't it?
Yeah, so we do, yeah. I mean, normally we have a retail area that you can come in and buy a bunch of baking supplies as well as, you know, pick up your bags of flour. What we're doing right now is a sidewalk, store-to-sidewalk program. So when you go online, there should be a drop-down that says local pickup.
Uh-huh.
If there's not everybody's browser will show that from what I understand from talking to people. If it doesn't show up, put in our address, 1120 Holm, Petaluma, as your shipping location, and that will also set you up for local pickup.
Okay. Well, that's really valuable information, mm-hmm. and it's worth
it. And then, people have been, I mean, normally it's just local, but yeah, I think, you know, people are getting a little stir crazy at this point. So we've had people from, you know, from San Jose or over in the East Bay, San Francisco, that are, you know, doing anything to get out of the house. So they'll set it up for a local pickup and drive up here for the day.
Okay, well, you've coined a new phrase that we've never heard,
yeah.
Store to sidewalk. That's very, very clever, Jim. So people can go to
what happens is you place the local order. We're running about 24 hours to 36 hours behind that. So you place your order. We have a couple of people here that are going around, and they'll pick it, and we put it up by the door. Our computer, unfortunately, will tell you as soon as we start to pick it that it's ready. So our direction to everybody is wait until one of our staff calls you and says your order is ready. Okay. And then you just drive down to the building, you pull up in front of the door, call us, and tell us that you're here to pick it up, and one of the people will take your order out to you.
Okay.
So are there limitations on how much you can order?
No.
Okay.
Okay. The only limitation is based on, you know, what we have in stock or what we have available for the day. That's it.
Sounds good. So just go to the Central Milling website and then see what's available, order it, and then the drop-down choice would be obviously curbside pickup at Petaluma, and place your order, and then you'll get a confirmation about when the order is ready. Is that correct, Jim?
Yeah, via phone call. Okay, don't worry about what the email says. If we haven't called you, it's not ready yet.
All right.
So give us your phone number.
Well, we don't want people calling to order. They're not going to.
No, I know.
Right.
No, I can give you the store phone number, sure.
Or the email.
Yeah, because the one thing with the phones, literally for the last 6 weeks, we have 4 phone lines. They do not stop ringing.
Okay.
One of the staff hangs the phone up and it starts to ring again. So wait for us to call you. Don't call the check. Wait for us to call you. But where you go is www.centralmilling.com. And then when you look at that page up there at the top, there's a store. And you click on the store tab. And then that'll give you your options for organic or commercial, sprouted grain, Tony Gimignani flour, which we make. And then you just go from there. Just go through the menu. Click on the flour. It'll tell you if it's available for today or not.
Great. Jim McCarthy from Keith Justo Bakery Supply in Petaluma. Thanks for educating us. We appreciate your time.
You bet. Can I just say one more thing?
Sure.
My staff here has been working so hard. This is the 6th week in a row. We've been in here on a Saturday just to pack stuff up and ship stuff out. And I just want to say, because I know a couple of them are out there listening, that I'm very fortunate to have the people working for me that I do. They are working very, very hard to make this all happen.
That's great.
Nice words. And thanks. Hopefully we'll have you back on when things settle down and we'll break bread together.
Oh, I would love that.
All right,
you
Jim.
Bet.
Take care. Jim McCarthy. We'll chat with a wonderful chef and author who we've had on the show actually for his first book many years ago when he was very young. He's got a beautiful new book. Amazon said it was one of the best new releases of spring, if not their pick. It's called Vegetable Kingdom. Chef Bryant Terry, he'll be joining us next after this message.
Join the switch to crystal clear KSRO FM, 103.5 Santa Rosa, Windsor, 94.5 Petaluma. Hear the difference.
The Petaluma Eastside Market at Lucchese Park, Tuesdays 10 to 1:30, is open for our community to be able to buy fresh organic produce and locally produced goods direct from the farmers, ranchers, and producers. Market vendors are following official guidelines set by the Department of Public Health to ensure everyone's safety. All vendors at the market are implementing safety protocols such as increased hand washing, no sampling, and washing hands after handling money. Social distancing, waving elbows, jazz hands, and winking are all encouraged. Get vitamin C and more from oranges, pomelos, mandarins, and grapefruits. Grab local honeys and teas to soothe cold symptoms. No better time to eat healthy and organic winter veggies. Fermented foods like kimchi and sauerkraut. Organic sweet jewel dates, microgreens, Gravenstein apple vinegars, Strauss Family Creamery milk, creams, yogurt, and butter. Gluten-free baked goods from Mochi Mill. Lunch or dinner ready-made from What a Chicken, The Green Grocer, Roti Indian Food to Go, and more. Go online to ilovefarmersmarkets.org.
Hi, Austin here from More Home Services. Given the current situation with the coronavirus, you might be wondering if we're still available for service calls or system installations. Well, the answer is yes, we are open for business, but it's not quite business as usual. First of all, our technicians will be sanitizing their hands before and after each and every service call. Then when you open the door to our friendly technicians, they'll be smiling and they'll be wearing rubber gloves. They'll be toting a bottle of hand sanitizer, and if you want, they'll even put a mask on their face. In short, we'll do everything we can to help keep you safe and our technicians safe. Just know that if you have plumbing or AC problems, we're still here to serve you, even if it's not quite business as usual. Give us a call at 707-505-8000 or online at morehomeservices.com. That's 707-505-8000, or you can find us online at morehomeservices.com.
Nestled in the hills of Sebastopol is Manzana Products, a historic apple cannery. As demand for Manzana's products grows, so do the opportunities to join our team. As an essential business, we are hiring now general laborers, maintenance technicians, forklift drivers, and machine operators. Manzana offers excellent pay, advancement opportunities, and 100% employer-paid benefits. Apply today at manzanaproductsco.com or in person at 9141 Green Valley Road in Sebastopol.
With Sonoma County's most accurate, most dependable forecast, here's Daniel Trucios on the KSRO Weather Watch.
Mostly sunny conditions today, high of 64, 58 on the coast. Partly cloudy tonight, low 47, 46 on the shores. Tomorrow, a few clouds coming in at 64 degrees, 56 in Bodega Bay. Partly cloudy then for Monday at 66, 58 along the coast. Depend on weather every 30 minutes on FM News Talk 103.5 and 94.5. KSRO.
In the KSRO kitchen, I'm Steve Garner along with Chef John Ash, celebrating 34 years in the kitchen, and we're delighted to welcome Bryant Terry to the show. Bryant's new book is called Vegetable Kingdom, The Abundant World of Vegan Recipes. And we followed Bryant's work for a number of years. He's got a resume that's as long as our arm, and we'll try to condense that. But Bryant first joined us many, many years ago when he was just a youngster and came up to Santa Rosa. Do you remember that, Bryant, when you were just barely out of knee pants when you came up?
Oh, yeah. I remember those days.
And that was for your first book. And what was that first book?
Vegan Soul Kitchen.
Yeah, that was it, the Vegan Soul Kitchen. And here you are several books later, and this book just out on 10-speed press called Vegetable Kingdom. You're talking with us from your home in Oakland, I believe, this morning?
I am. I'm so happy to be talking to people other than my wife and two daughters. So thank you guys for breaking up the monotony.
You better be careful.
This is really great. The new book has about 175 plus recipes. I remember seeing an article you actually did in the Chronicle a while back about your gardening. And I know you're really into doing urban gardening and growing as much food as you can. Besides being a family man with your two girls and your wife, you're also a part of a very unique museum in San Francisco. So we can go a lot of different places to track what you've been up to since we had you on the show many, many years ago.
So tell us, how did you get there? How did you get to being vegan, being a great gardener? Because that, you know, vegan, it's funny. It has, you know, sometimes for some people, a kind of, you know, not the most exciting sort of thing to do. People think vegan food is bland and blah, blah, blah. I mean, yours is certainly not. But how did you get there?
Well, it's interesting. I'm glad you brought up my first book, Vegan Soul Kitchen, because I actually put a post up on Instagram a couple days ago. Because, you know, it's one of those things where as a creative person, as a chef, you continue to hone your skills and, you know, just improve. And so a lot of times I'm like, I hate those old books. I don't ever want to see that book again. You know, I always feel like whenever I do the next book, then the last one just sucks. And so I was watching this documentary film, Birth of Cool, about Miles Davis the other night with my family. And I was it was really fun explaining to my daughters the connection between Miles Davis and the Vegan Soul Kitchen. And the connection is that I was deeply inspired by some of the album covers that he did back in 50s, 60s for Prestige Records and Blue Note. And that's where the origins of that cover came from. And, you know, for me, that book was really about breaking from the stereotypes that a lot of people had and some continue to have about vegan food being kind of like, you know, Berkeley, 1970s, macrobiotic, bland, boring, and brown. And so I really wanted to kind of usher in this kind of like modern era of vegan cooking. And so from the aesthetics of the cover, having Alice Waters give that beautiful blurb, and then just really presenting food from the African diaspora with the emphasis on the American South in a way that is fresh, that's bright, that's vegetable driven. And I feel like, you know, that book has Well, I'll say that I was very excited and happy to see the response to that Instagram post. And a lot of people talked about it being like their favorite vegan cookbook, one of the first vegan cookbooks they bought, the vegan cookbook that showed them that, you know, plant-based cooking could be exciting and delicious and fun. And so, you know, it was great timing just having that and kind of lifting my spirits in spite of everything going on in the world.
So in this new book, you give credit to your two daughters, a lot of credit to your two daughters who were one, I guess, who eats anything and the other one who doesn't eat anything at all. And that somehow you had to satisfy their taste, that all of the recipes needed to be things your daughters would approve of eating.
Yeah, yeah. You know, most of my books, or I should say all of them, have this texture of autobiography. So as I grow, the books grow with me. And, you know, I'm a family man now. I have these two daughters. Just kind of going back to the whole thing about home gardening, we planted our gardens about a month ago, kind of right around the time that, you know, we had the shelter in place. And it was really perfect timing because their distance learning program kicked in at their school. And so we actually used the garden as a site for science classes. And so a lot of what we were doing there, we were connecting it to science and math as well. But, you know, at this point, I'm really trying to continue to help them fall in love with the diversity, the complexity, the array of delicious food that is available in the vegetable kingdom. And, you know, I won't say this is a kid's cookbook, but I did feel like I wanted the recipes. In fact, I say the litmus test to the success of any of the recipes that made it to the book was if they liked the recipes or not. And, you know, it was just really exciting having them kind of help me co-create this because I wanted it to be a mix of things that, you know, I always say it kind of fits somewhere in the middle of things that you might find at a restaurant, things that are, you know, kind of like basic home cooking. I wanted the presentation to be beautiful. I wanted people to be introduced to vegetables that they might not necessarily encounter at conventional supermarkets. I wanted people to feel like these are recipes that they could take to, you know, parties and cookouts. And it's just been really exciting seeing this book being kind of a tool that a lot of people are using as folks are being, you know, kind of inside doing a lot of more home cooking and definitely thinking about how can they include more vegetables and more health forward cooking into their array of skills.
You mentioned Miles Davis and Birth of the Cool. One of the hallmarks of all your books, which I just love, and because there's lots of vegan cookbooks out there, but there's no vegan style cookbooks that have your musical education and your tastes prolific throughout the book. And you have a couple pages full of music to cook by.
Yeah.
And would you talk about your family's background in music, some of your uncles and some of their contributions?
Yeah, well, it all goes back to my maternal grandfather, Eddie. He started a group, Eddie Bryan and the Four Stars of Harmony, and they were this traveling sanctified gospel group in Memphis in the 50s. And so because of his connection to music, all of his children are musicians, including my mother. And, you know, they range from my mom, who sings in the church choir, to my Uncle Don, who was the head house songwriter for High Records in the 70s and 80s, and he wrote some hits for Al Green and Willie Mitchell and his wife Ann Peebles. And so just growing up with music and food being so integral, whenever we had family gatherings, you know, there was food, music present, people singing, playing the piano. And so there's never been, it's always been inseparable for me, and it's been important for me to include music and art and culture in my books. And, you know, a lot of that is inspired by this quote by Wendell Berry when he talks about kind of bringing the culture back into agriculture and how our industrialized food system has largely kind of stripped many of those things away, and you have this chasm where food is on one side and art and culture and community are way over on the other side somewhere else. And, you know, much of my mission has been about kind of bridging those things and helping people get excited about the way that these things, you know, intersect in all of our lives. You know, most people, they talk about when you have a dinner party, you're playing music in the background, you're having like a cookout, there's music playing. And so I just really want people to have fun with the book and, you know, move past these stereotypes, which often persist about, you know, people who describe themselves as vegan being these kind of finger wagging nannies that are, you know, telling everyone how you should be eating and what you should be doing. And so that's not what I'm about. I'm really about helping people to have fun with plant-based cooking and showing them that it can be just as satisfying as, you know, meals that might include animal products.
So I was fascinated by how the book is structured. It's not the typical cookbook of here are first courses, here are soups, here are salads, and all of that stuff, but a whole different way of, which I guess goes to your love of gardening also. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, the structure of the book, and you know, I thought a lot about how to structure this book. And the main thing is I wanted it to be the type of book where you take it to the farmer's market, or not even take it to the farmer's market. You go to the farmer's market, you see, by the way, that farmer's market commercial that came on before the segment was awesome, I have to say.
Thank you.
But, you know, you go to the market, you see what's beautiful, what's fresh, what's seasonal, take that home, and then you find a recipe that would allow you to kind of beautifully play with that, you know, vegetable or whatever. And so the book is divided by, I structure it in a way that people think about like plants. So seeds, bulbs, stems, flowers, fruits, leaves, tubers, and roots. Mm-hmm. And the idea of that came from my daughter coming home talking about her gardening class at school and how they talked about, you know, plants in that way. And, you know, I found that it's just a great way for people to, you know, I'm always thinking about subtle ways of educating the readers, whether it's about educating them about different musical genres through my soundtracks, or, you know, helping them understand more sociopolitical issues through the films or books I might recommend. And just that simple act of structuring the rest, the chapters in that way, a lot of people have just, you know, commented that, oh, you know, that was such a great way for me to even think about plants in ways that I just don't, because I'm just eating them. And so, you know, it's been fun. It's been exciting to see people kind of coming to vegetables that are familiar, but not necessarily in ways that they have traditionally prepared them. For example, the apple and kohlrabi coleslaw has been something that a lot of people have been commenting on, just like, you know, I see kohlrabi, I don't know what to do with it, but pairing it with the apples and this really aggressive vinaigrette, and then finishing it with that the parsley leaves, a lot of people have just been like, you know, simple, straightforward, but flavorful in a way that I never imagined, and definitely, you know, have never cooked kohlrabi before. So thank you. And that's the type of, you know, the mission that I had was, is kind of giving people an opportunity to play with things that they probably have seen, but never really knew how to prepare in their own home kitchens.
Well, we should probably jump into the book in the next, for the next 6 or 7 minutes. The cover is just beautiful. Mm-hmm. What is that salad on the cover of the book?
Well, that's actually, and shout out to Ed Anderson, shout out to my whole team at 10 Speed Press, Lillian Kang, Veronica, Monifa, who did the food styling. But that's actually, it's not a salad. Oh, so the recipe is, it's tofu that's been marinated in a jerk marinade. Oh. And then I take these collard leaves, blanch them, wrap the tofu in those, and then give it a kind of quick pan fry. And so, it's jerk tofu wrapped in collard leaves with this creamy, silky, delicious cilantro sauce. So that's what's on the cover, and it's actually one of my favorite recipes in the book.
And then what's on the back?
On the back, oh my gosh. So those are the the sweet potato and asparagus po' boys. You know, I know for a lot of people, I went to college in New Orleans, one of my favorite cities in general, but definitely one of my favorite food cities in the world. And so I'm always inspired by kind of Louisiana, Cajun Creole cuisine. And I wanted to create an homage to po' boys. And I know that these may not kind of read as a po' boy, because I think when people think about po' boys, they're thinking like, you know, fried fish and fried seafood. Mm-hmm. But, you know, all the elements that one might typically have in there, creamy remoulade, you know, that they call it having it dressed when you have the remoulade on there, the lettuce, the tomatoes, and those sweet potatoes are just, they're so creamy and delicious. And I actually employ this technique of boiling water, slicing the sweet potatoes into these half-inch discs, and then letting them sit in the boiling water, or after the water is boiled, taking off, letting the sweet potatoes sit in there for about an hour, and that just gives them this creaminess. So when they're roasted, the outside is crisp and roasted and has this kind of caramelized feel, but then the inside is just silky and creamy, and that's one of the the cornerstones of the deliciousness of that particular recipe.
So the first, I don't know what they call it, chapter, but the first thing is about seeds, which I really love. And I have to tell you, and it was just delicious, the pea shoot and peanut salad with miso dressing. It was so simple to do, but it was so... I had all kinds of delicious textures and flavors, and so that's a keeper for sure.
Yeah, I love that recipe. It was inspired by, there's a restaurant in Oakland, Tinny East Kitchen, and it's a Burmese restaurant owned by an Ethiopian woman, my friend Tio. And so they have a kind of pea shoots and cabbage salad, so that one was inspired by that. And yeah, like you said, it's simple. You look at it, just looks kind of like, oh, yeah, typical salad, but that flavor is just, you know, off the charts. Yeah. I'm glad you like that one.
That was nice because you have a lot of spring-inspired recipes, several asparagus recipes in there, and that spicy spring pea sauce also looked very enticing, too. We've got a lot of chapters. We're certainly not going to be able to get through them.
But some of your favorites.
Well, I'm a big slaw fan, so I like Bryant, the apple and kohlrabi coleslaw. I'm dying to try that because your Memphis slaw is pretty much my standard slaw, what you do with that. But I have to admit, I use a little bit of pureed yellow onion in my slaw and a little bit of sugar. I know. I just want to let you know. I don't know. You might want to try pureed a little bit, maybe one tablespoon of yellow onion. It kicks it to another level, Brian. Also, maybe a little horseradish too, and just a little bit of sweetener, whatever kind of sweet you'd like. You don't need to do that. It's just my recommendation.
No, are
you telling the chef what to do?
I'm not. I should just shut my mouth. Really.
No. I'm a student. I'm always trying to learn new techniques. I'm definitely going to be incorporating that pureed onion into the recipe. But I actually do use a couple teaspoons of raw cane sugar. And, you know, I, the funny thing is I'm often like, you know, you don't need to add any kind of sugar to these dishes because, you know, we just want to depend on the natural sugar. But my wife makes a lot of Asian dishes. And just like sometimes just a little touch of sugar can make all the difference. And so I've been less stringent about, you know, this whole idea that you don't need to add any added sugar because it does make a difference. And it certainly does in this coleslaw dish.
So I want to mention one to you. You didn't mention it in the structure of the book, but it's there. And those are fungi, the mushroom family. And you have one. Again, it's so simple, but it's my favorite mushroom, maitake mushroom, that you've grilled and then put on top of slow roasted grits. It's like, I want that now.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I did mention that because, you know, I think we know that mushrooms aren't botanically a part of the vegetable kingdom. And like, come on, guys, I can't have a book without mushrooms in here. So I always tongue in cheek and say, like, cool out. OK, like, let's not get too nerdy about this. I'm just having fun here. So but yeah, that grilled maitake mushrooms is definitely a keeper. And, you know, one of my favorite recipes, and we're coming out of winter and going into the spring, but just in terms of a grounding, delicious winter recipe, that millet roux mushroom gumbo is just off the charts. And, you know, a lot of people these days have gluten sensitivities. And so I had been searching for a gluten-free roux for a while, just testing different flours because, you know, most typical roux have all-purpose flour, and so that would make it hard for people with gluten sensitivities. And I finally landed on millet. And this millet flour not only provides a gluten-free roux, but it actually is so much more robust and complex than typical roux. And so it goes perfectly with a recipe like this.
We've only scratched the surface on Brian Terry's new book. It's called Vegetable Kingdom. This is 23 minutes that we'll never get back. But we're going to have Brian come up and sit in with John and me when all this dies down and you're able to do some traveling. So, Brian, would you please choose your favorite number today between 1 and 12?
All right. We got to go with 7.
Caller number 7 at 636-1350 will win a copy of Vegetable Kingdom, The Abundant World of Vegan Recipes by Bryant Terry. His last name spelled T-E-R-R-Y. This has been quick. It's been great. It's so good to connect with you again. And hopefully we'll have a chance to sit together and break bread at a later date.
Steve, John, thank you so much for having me on, and I will definitely make my way up so we can...
All right, Brian, take care. You and your family, our best.
Take care.
Bye-bye. there we have it. Another hour. It is history. We'll take a break for news and a news update with Michelle Marquess following ABC News at the top of the hour. We'll see you next week in the kitchen, Chef Ash.
I hope so.
I'm Steve Garner. Thanks for listening. This is KSRO Santa Rosa.